I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roman Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, romanoz.com.au.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, got some interesting stuff this week, Lynn.
Right.
First of all, I'm going to be chatting with a chap named Malachi Quinn.
Yes.
Now, he's a member of the Campbelltown Joggers. Okay, and we ran into him at Hillston, but no, he didn't jog from Campbelltown in New South Wales to Hillston. In fact, they rode their bicycles.
Yes,
that's incredible.
Long trek on
a
bike.
A very long trek. We had a nice chat with those guys. There was a fairly decent sort of crew there. They had a backup vehicle in case anyone got a flat tire and so on and so forth.
Yeah,
and they told us they average about 22 kilometres an hour. On their bicycles.
An hour.
Yep.
Wow.
So they're moving pretty quickly.
Good. Yeah.
Yep. And then straight after that, you are going to be chatting with somebody. Who's that going to be, Lynn?
I'm going to catch up with Max at the Gilgandra Museum, and he's going to tell us all about the wonderful things there at the museum in Gilgandra.
Fabulous. And then finally, we are going to catch up with Mel and Susie in Lightning Ridge.
Ah, yes.
Mel and Susie, two of Australia's most famous bush poets and bush comedians.
Yes, they're wonderful to watch.
That's going to be an experience, I've got to tell you. I think it's going to be a hoot. So as well as all of this, we've also got what? A great selection of music.
But as requested by the
people. By the people we
interview.
That's it. So what do you reckon, Lynn?
On with the show.
Oh, welcome back, listeners. Phil C here from Roman Oz, and I'm with Malachi Quinn, and he's from the Campbelltown Joggers. Now, you might think joggers running, but actually these guys are bicycle riders, aren't you? You're cyclists.
Correct.
Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, so tell us all about what you're doing out here.
Now, we're going from Griffith to Mount Hope.
Okay.
And then back into Griffith. So we're doing 440 Ks on the bike.
Okay.
And we're doing it to prepare ourselves for a ride from Darwin to Adelaide in July.
Darwin to Adelaide in July.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's about 3,000 Ks.
Okay. So we are actually at Hillston.
Correct.
Now, Hillston to Griffith, where you started, how far is that?
106 Ks.
So you did 106 Ks today in the saddle.
Yeah.
And that was roughly, what would you say, about 8 hours in the saddle?
Yeah, what time did we leave, guys?
8 o'clock.
So 8 o'clock.
And we got back
4 o'clock.
8 o'clock till 4 o'clock, yeah?
Yeah.
So what's that, 8 hours?
It's about that, yeah.
You didn't ride for 8 hours, though, did you? You had a stop along the way.
We had a couple of stops, yeah, but pretty much, I mean, when you're doing that sort of mileage, you've got to keep moving. So.
Okay.
Yeah, we had a couple of breaks, but we got the mileage in.
All right. Now how many's in your crew? We got a few gentlemen here.
I think we've got about 10.
10 in the crew for this one?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's about three or four ladies.
It's a lot of them are couples as well, you know, husband and wife sort of thing. So we've known each other for a long time.
Right.
Because we were joggers. We used to be runners before we were cyclists.
Okay.
So we've known each other for probably a lot of those 20, 30 years.
So why did you get out of jogging and get into cycling?
There wasn't a lot of choice, because when your knees seize up or become arthritic,
right,
you can either give it in because you can't run, or you can find something else you can do. So we found cycling is easier on the body.
Yep.
And you can do, we were distance runners, like marathons, half marathons. So with the cycling, you can go out there and you can do 100 Ks, you can do eight hours in the saddle, you know.
Okay.
And I guess that's what we're looking for, not a 5 minute sort of exercise, more a
long distance.
Exactly.
Endurance.
Exactly.
All right. So you're on the road for how long with this trip?
A week.
So a week of cycling?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And this is a warm up to what?
To cycling from Darwin to Adelaide in July.
And how far is it from Darwin to
Adelaide? It's about 3,300 kilometres.
And how long do you think you're going to need for a trip like that?
We're going to take about 40 days, we reckon.
40 days?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. Okay.
Plus a few stops here and there. You know?
Oh, I would hope so.
And a few sherbets along the way.
And hopefully a good backward wind to help you along.
It'd help.
Is it a very hilly country where you're going,
no,
or where you've been?
It's flat, and that's why we're cycling in this area, because it's so flat, straight roads,
Okay.
You know, you're going to have that for hour on hour. So when we do the Darwin to Adelaide, it'll be the same thing. Flat as a tack, straight roads. A bit boring, to be honest with you.
Okay.
But that's part of the challenge.
Okay.
And we can find similar conditions here from Griffith to where we are today.
Which tonight. Is, of course, Hilston.
Correct.
Hilston.
Glad you threw that in.
Oh, I had to. I had to think of it. I had to look, though, because I've got to tell you. So the gentleman that just turned the music on, he drives your...
Yeah, he's our support
man. He's your support man.
Yeah.
He's got
he's
the vehicle.
Our roadie.
He's the roadie.
He's the roadie.
All right, okay. And what about if you have injuries? Does he, like, bandage you up and...
No, we wouldn't allow him to do that.
You wouldn't allow him to bandage you up?
No.
All right.
He's good at providing a drink.
Okay.
A beer or two, but,
okay.
But we don't have too many. We've not had too many accidents or things like that.
No,
not that it doesn't happen, but we've been lucky so far, and we take our time.
And you got repairs. I noticed this gentleman here. He's sorting out his wheel
and
putting on a new tire or a new inner tube.
He's doing his best.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Sorry,
oh well, that's the support crew. Okay. He's come along to offer us a Band-Aid, all right.
Yeah, so you do get some mechanical problems.
Of course.
But obviously you try and prepare yourself for that, and hopefully... Because I guess if you're on, like, particularly from Darwin to Adelaide, there's no backup.
No.
You know, you've got to be able... You've got to be self-sufficient.
I understand.
Essentially, right? There's no shops to pop into and stuff like that. So that's what we aim to do.
So you carry, obviously, in the support vehicle, which you're towing a trailer, you've obviously got tyres, spare wheels.
Yeah.
I suppose... Saddle, maybe not.
Not so much that, but certainly the big problems are tyres and the inner tubes.
Well, obviously they wear out, obviously.
Yeah, and you get punctures.
You get punctures.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's easier to just throw it out than repair it, I guess.
Well, sometimes it is, because sometimes Eric's struggling at the moment trying to fix his, but he didn't just pick up one puncture, he got about six or seven at the same time.
Oh, okay.
Radio. So he's got a bigger challenge to fix that.
So the whole tyre is... It's a throw-out.
Probably ratchet.
Yeah, absolutely throw it out. All right, so can I ask you how old you are?
Yeah, 74.
74. And are you the...
Don't say it like that.
Well, I'm thinking... No, I'm saying...
If it was 94, then you can say 94.
No, but I mean 74, riding a bicycle for 3,500 kilometres on that next race, that's quite a feat. That's a feat, don't you think? I mean, I'm saying that with the utmost respect.
Well, we're just talking about it now. We've still got to do it, you know. It's easy talking
about
it.
I've got every faith in you. I can see the support crew, the Band-Aid man sitting there smiling, wondering why he didn't get picked for this chat. So what's the average age then of the riders?
I suppose it's around about 68.
Okay. Comes from one of the ladies, so 68 is the average age.
Yeah.
What's the oldest member of your group?
Me, unfortunately.
You, unfortunately. Yeah, okay, I'll take that one back. Yeah. What's the youngest member of your group? Debbie's
34.
You're 58. See, cycling suits her. She doesn't look 58. You don't look 70. Did you say 70? 74?
74.
Wow, see, it's fitness. It's of. He's an actor. He doesn't act his age. No, I can tell that when you all pointed to him and said he's the biggest clown. But you're also the secretary of the group or the captain.
No, we don't have any of that sort of official stuff.
So what's your position? You just
we haven't.
Always in the rear, following
the younger ones. Yeah,
or?
No, just cyclists. We're just a group of. We're not a club as such.
Okay.
You know, I suppose we are.
Well, you said the Joggers Club.
The Joggers Club,
Campbelltown,
that's right.
Joggers Club.
But as I say, we're kind of all has-been joggers.
Okay.
So now we're just moving on to something else.
Has-been. That means you were famous at some stage.
No. We were just... But we did do a lot of half marathons, that sort of stuff. Long kiss and stuff. So they in our time, we've been good in our day, but We're just moving on
gracefully. And this other gentleman here directly opposite us, he said, what's his name, this chap here?
Ted.
Now, Ted said if you add all our ages up together, what was the answer to that question, Ted? If you add everybody's age up together?
What's the average?
Bloody lot.
It's a bloody lot, yeah.
It'll be over 500.
Be over 500.
700.
Is anybody there for 720? It's not an auction. No, it's a chat with some really fun, interesting people. Look, I wish you well.
Thank you.
I hope you do really, really well. Have you got anything else coming up other than this Adelaide trip?
No, we think that's enough.
That'll be enough for this year. But you're always going to be doing it, obviously.
Well,
which one?
Oh yeah, we did France a couple of years ago. We did from Saint-Malo in the north of France down to Nice in the south. So that was 1,700 kilometres we did.
France is pretty hilly.
Oh, it's really hilly.
Really
it's
rugged.
Really,
yeah.
It is a struggle. I mean, compared to this, which is flat as anything, it's like every day. It was a challenge. Yeah.
So, what would be your average speed?
I can tell you, today it was probably 22.4 kilometres.
22. Very precise, isn't it? 22.
Yeah, well, I'll have a little readout which tells me so.
So you're not going to get booked for speeding.
No.
And if we stand here and drink many more of these, you might get arrested for being over the affluence of Inkahol. What do you reckon?
That's easy for you to say.
It is indeed. Mate, thank you so much
for
your time. It's been a wonderful conversation with you and your group. Thank you all for taking the time to chat with us. Now, I'm going to play you a song. It's got to be Aussie. Who's your favourite band?
He's the maestro. Midnight Oil we're going to play.
You're going to play Midnight Oil. That's,
yeah, apparently.
That's
the song you just heard.
The song we just heard.
Dead Heart.
All right.
Dead Heart by Midnight Oil.
We're going to the Dead Heart.
We're going to the Dead Heart, listeners, by Midnight Oil. Stick around for more Roman Oz straight after that.
Your tongue, white man came to everyone.
Hello, listeners. Phil C here with Lynn, and we're at Gilgandra, and we are at the
Gilgandra
Museum. All right.
Okay, and I'm with Max. How are you today, Max?
I'm not too bad, thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time. So can you tell us a little bit about the Gilgandra Museum?
The Gilgandra Museum originally started quite a long time ago, but then it came into this building here, or that building there, in 1996, and it was opened, and it's been extended three times to fit things in.
Yes.
And there's many more things that could come in that relate to the Gilgandra area that aren't in there. Probably with a little bit of reorganisation we can add more to it, but it's certainly a very interesting museum. The cross section, we've got very rare tractors in there. We've got a printing press from down the street here, the old lead, I forget what you call it, but anyway, everything was made with lead before they printed.
Right.
There's an old telephone exchange with the cords on it, where when you rang in you put the cord in.
Yes.
There's many telephones. It's great to get children in here because they, how do you operate that phone? Yes.
Exactly. And how do I get YouTube on that?
Yeah, exactly. It's a wonderful education. Then to see the buggies and the horses, there's actually solid horses being bought to put in front of the buggies. There's another one in a sloping thing that the horse walks all the time, and that drives the cleaning machine to clean wheat. Grains. This, look, it just goes on and on what you can see here.
A lot of things that, you know, children now would not know about, like, as you said, the telephones. And I did hear that there was an old cooktop in there, a wood-fired stove and everything else. So
there is.
Yes.
The old chip heaters for heating the water before to put in the bathtub.
Yeah. No, that, yes.
You know, they're here and they're set up in the room just down the side there. And it's set up as a little hospital there. There's actually an old birthing bed in there from the days. And a lot of the tools and equipment that the doctors used in the earlier day. Then you go around a little bit further and there's a school that's been brought in from out near Turrawina. Built many, many years ago. It's got the old long desks in there. And the
inkwells
is where you put your pens on the front of it.
I remember those desks from... That's going back a little bit.
My very word it is. When you go on a... Sorry.
No, you're right. Keep going, Matt.
Go on a little bit further and, you know, we had a dairy here owned by the Hargraves brothers and a lot of their equipment is there. You know, supplied Gilgandra with all the milk and so forth, and then there's many old machines, and then you come around into the main museum that we've been talking about.
Right. And I noticed out the front you've got windmills as well that are powering...
the kangaroo and Ned Kelly.
Yes, that's very clever.
Very clever. Who thought of that, Max?
It's a chap that lived out at Turrawina and in fact, he even built the observatory that's down here. Very clever farmer. And he and my dad did a lot of work here together. They just suited each other and they certainly did a lot of work here. But that Howard Rotary Hoe out there, my great uncle was the man that first built the first one.
Oh, right.
Yeah, Cliff Howard.
Oh, okay.
My mother was a Howard and her father's brother was Cliff Howard.
So you've been in this area for quite a while then, obviously.
The longest I've been away from Gilgandra is 6 weeks.
Really?
So you were born in Gilgandra, mate?
Yes.
And lived here all your life with the exception of 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And also, too, I noticed that you've got a couple of posters with regards to the Kooee March, which Gilgandra's famous for.
Exactly.
Back in 1915, I think it was, where 35 soldiers
finished
started.
Up in Sydney. 26 left here.
Yeah, 26.
But then they kept joining them as they went down. Some of them went to the ball the night before they left, and they thought, oh, we're going to join this. So they went home, got their gear, and caught up with them. Out along the road somewhere.
Oh, right.
And once again, Cliff Howard's and my grandfather's brother was finished up marching with them in Sydney.
Oh, right, okay.
Yes. That what you're pointing at there now is that they are raising money to build a hospital here in Gilgandra.
Right.
And they for if you wrote on there, put your name on there, it cost you sixpence.
Oh, right. Okay.
In other words, 5 cents these days.
Yeah.
And then a lady crocheted the whole lot. Would you call it crochet?
Oh.
Anyway, she stitched the whole lot.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, embroidery.
Embroidered, that's the word.
Oh,
so it's an embroidered, I guess it's a sheet or a blanket, isn't it?
It's a sheet.
It's the size of a bed sheet.
Yes.
Wow.
And if you could only get all the names, you'd know how many sixpences they raised. But
wow.
That was a minimum.
That's
and then
impressive.
Next to that you can see the Lloyd Middleton thing
Copper.
There. He went to school in Gilgandra here for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And not long. But, you know, we've had quite a few people go to war from here.
Yes.
And, you know, away from here, there's a lot of other things that you can visit in Gilgandra.
There is, right. Okay.
What would you suggest, Max?
Yes.
Well,
for our listeners.
It's regarded as the town of windmills.
Yes.
And we're known for the windmills, and you understand the windmill is designed to bring up the sub-artesian water.
Correct, yes.
So before a town water system was here, we had... they drew either rainwater tank or bore water.
Right.
And then down along the road there, well, it's actually the windmill walk goes from the Cooey Heritage Centre right down to the main street along the riverbank.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We did notice that.
Okay. And then we've got the cactus world.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking about down along this road. That's the biggest collection of cacti in, I think, the Southern Hemisphere.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Okay. He exports... cactuses all over the world.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And then you go down further and the observatory, unfortunately, we're talking about the chap that worked up here. He built that.
Right.
But it's not open anymore.
No.
Hopefully someday someone will come along
and open it.
And then you've got the main street. There's lots of other things to see in Gilgandra, the sites of the old sawmill. We had three sawmills once upon a time. A flour mill, which closed down and then burnt in the later years. And let me think, out on a road, we've got what's called a corduroy road.
Right.
Do you understand a corduroy road?
No.
No.
Well,
not at all.
It travels from the village Kirban west. And in the days of the Cobb and Co. coaches on the Black Soil Plains,
right,
when it got wet, the coaches would bog.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So they cut and laid white cypress trees side by side for miles.
Oh, okay. So that the coach could go across.
So the coach wouldn't bog.
Oh, wow.
And used only in the wet time, of course, mm-hmm. because it was quite rough. But it got through.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, another experience we had, we've got the opposite, just up here where the grain receival businesses are. We had a corduroy road there because it was raw sand and the wagons loaded with goods would bog in the raw sands. We went to the opposite.
Uh-huh.
Because it was too dry.
Yes.
Yep.
You laid a corduroy road there.
Oh. So that's probably where the name for corduroy fabric came from, is it?
Could have been. Could have very easily been.
Well, there you go.
I don't know the answer. We've got what's called the Berrida Wool Shed.
Yes.
That you can ring up and make an appointment, go out and see the old shed. Very old.
Mm-hmm.
There are photos of it here somewhere. I just can't see one quickly.
Mm.
But Gilgandra is an old area, although we're not the first town settled on the Castlereagh River, Mindurin was.
Okay.
Oh, right.
And then even this little village I talked about, Kirban, was settled before Gilgandra.
Mm. Okay.
But then we're known for mixed farming.
Yes.
You know, grains, sheep, cattle.
Cattle,
goats are coming in now.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yep.
And... I don't know. There's a lot of other things you can see.
So if someone was to come to the museum, how long would they need to take?
Well, some people go through in 15 minutes. Other people go through in 3 hours. It depends how you want to study, because a lot of the things have a little
story to them
that you can go and stand there and read.
Yep.
Okay.
And very interesting to read all that, and you'll see the names of the people in the Gilgandra area, and as far as Walgett, that sort of thing, that they've donated things to the museum so that people can see them.
All right, well, that sounds very fascinating, Max. Thank you so much for taking the time to tell us all about the museum. Now, we're going to play an Aussie song for you. Who would you like us to play?
Oh, let's have the Seekers yes. and the Carnival is over.
Okay, I'm sure Phil will have that.
Absolutely, Len. I can do that. The Seekers, the Carnival is over. Max, thank you so much for taking the time today. It's been really great for us to be here. And I hope lots of listeners come through. When they come in through the area, they pop in and see you.
Yes, well, we do too. It's a very interesting town.
Yes.
We're known as a friendly town.
Yes.
So, been a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, there are several free camps in Gilgandra, aren't there, for overnight stay?
Yes. Yes, well, the council will actually be developing one between the museum here and the Kiwi Heritage Centre.
Okay,
there'll be
fantastic.
10 sites there.
Fantastic.
There, you know, no services provided.
No.
Okay.
But this free camp is just across the road at the
Sporties
or the
yes.
bowling club there.
Mm-hmm. That.
And then there's another one up at the Railway Hotel.
Yes.
Yep.
And down the main street, the Royal Hotel. There's a small area there where
yes.
people can free camp.
Mm. So you're going to be a very RV
friendly
town.
Well, I'd like to see that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because you'll get more people here.
I've got a, my wife and I have a caravan and
yep.
we headed out last year for a 10-week trip and it lasted 5 days.
the feeling.
We got to the South Australian border and that was it.
Happened to us.
Okay then.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks.
Now stick around, listeners, for more of Roman Oz straight after the carnival is over.
Say goodbye, my own true lover, as we sing a love song. How it breaks my heart to leave you. Now the carnival is gone.
I above. My tears are falling rain, for the carnival is over, we may never meet again.
Like a drum, my heart was beating, and your kiss was sweet as wine.
But the joys of love are fleeting, for Pierrot and Columbine. Now the harbor light is calling, this will be our last goodbye. Though the carnival is over, I will love you till I die. Like a drum, my heart was beating, and your kiss was sweet as wine. But the joy
with overseas travel in lockdown,
There's no better time to see what's offering in your own backyard. And if you want to do it in style, with all the bells and whistles, then 7th Street Caravans, located at 2212 Pacific Highway, Heatherbrae, is where the journey begins. Check out their range, Paramount, Silver Valley, Road Trip and Option RV. With dozens of layouts, there's something for everyone's needs. 7th Street also has a large range of pre-loved vans. They won't be beaten on price, so grab yourself a knockout deal today. Phone Aidan and the team on 4987 5288 or check out the website 7thstreetcaravans.com.au. Oh, welcome back, listeners. My name's Phil C, and this is Roaming Oz, and I'm in Lightning Ridge with two of its very famous characters, Mel and Susie. Now, they are the bush poets and comedians in Lightning Ridge. How are you today, ladies?
G'day, Phil.
G'day, Phil. We're wonderful today.
We're real good.
Sun's shining. Everything's perfect in beautiful Lightning Ridge.
Fantastic, ladies. Now, I'm going to just ask a few questions. First of all, Mel, how long have you been doing bush poetry?
For me, well over 20 years, Phil. Okay. Well over 20 years, but I've always been raised with bush poetry. My father has been writing poetry since before I was born,
mm-hmm.
and that would be probably 20 years or so now.
Lucky you can't see your viewers.
Radio's good for that.
Actually, we're sitting here in our pyjamas and you don't know.
As I did say, listeners, they are comics as well, as well as fantastic poets. Keep going, Mel. Tell us more.
Well, I've always grown up with poetry. My father, instead of reading us bedtime stories, he would recite his poetry to us, and he'd follow us around the house reciting his latest poem to Mum or my brother or I, whoever would be there. So I've always loved poetry. Banjo Paterson, Henry Lawson, my father's work. And in my mid-30s, I started to perform and have just been performing ever since. I love reciting poetry in front of an audience. I love the connection you get with that.
Then Melanie discovered that there's a competition circuit all over Australia. Small towns have beautiful small competitions. Then they go up to state competitions. And if you're really interested and passionate about competing with bush poetry, you can compete in the national title to become the Australian champion bush poetry reciter. So as soon as Melanie discovered that there were these little competitions, she started to go in them. And guess what? She started to win them almost immediately. She had a lot of success.
And Susie was the same when she first started to compete in the bush poetry competitions. The same story as me. Her first competition, she won, and she very quickly rose up and became an Australian champion. So it's a wonderful way to hone your reciting skills.
So quite a few years ago, Melanie entered a competition out in Winton. They were so very fortunate. For 10 years, they were sponsored by Qantas, which of course began its life out in Winton. It was called the Qantas Bush Poetry Australian Championships, and the male and female winner of that competition were able to fly then to America and perform at the Cowboy Poets Gatherings and do concerts all over the west coast of America and some of the central states. And Melanie, in 2004, the very final year that Qantas actually sponsored it, Melanie won that competition, and she got to go out to America and blow their minds with some Aussie bush poetry. Just tell them about the airport.
I got to the airport because I was being picked up by an American couple, and they said, we'll never recognise you in amongst all of the people. Right. How will we find you there? And I said, have a look for a 5-foot-tall woman with a black Akubra on her head, because I figured I'd be the only woman in that Denver airport with a black Akubra on my head.
Right.
And I was right. They'd never heard of Akubras in America. They had a sign that said Melanie Hall, and I found them. And over tea that night, she said to me, oh, Melanie, I was so embarrassed. I read your email and I said to Eldon, what's an Accubra? And why would she be wearing a foundation garment on her head? That's a true story.
Unbelievable, girls. Now, when did you actually come together as a working team?
Melanie was very lucky again. She inherited a park out in Queensland, in Western Queensland, in Winton, from probably the best bush poet that we've had since Banjo Paterson, a fellow called Milton Taylor. A lot of the listeners will have heard of Milton and seen him perform. Sadly, we lost him 5 or 6 years ago. But when he packed up in Whitney, left the park to Melanie, and I was practising for the Australian Championship, she said, come out here and just work with me for a few weeks, get some good practice in front of an audience. Well, what happened was we discovered that we clicked on stage so incredibly well. We've got exact opposite skills. So Melanie likes a nice structured show and I like to free fall and ad lib everything. And we discovered that, in fact, we learned so much. I learned about structuring a show. Melanie learned about being a little bit looser and going with whatever happened in the audience. We discovered that we performed duo work very, very tightly and well together. But most importantly, I think we are so lucky, Phil. We're so lucky because we learn a poem very, very quickly.
Okay.
We can take a poem the length of something like Mulga Bill's Bicycle and we can learn that in less than an hour and we can perform that on stage that night.
Really?
Now, you'll never polish it up to competition standard, but as long as you're putting that in front of an audience, it's in your brain and you're working on that poem the whole time.
Mm.
We're so fortunate that we've got... And that comes from knowing a lot of poetry when you're a child and having parents dribbling poems into your ear from the earliest, earliest age.
Which we both had. My father was a writer of poetry and dribbled his poetry into our ear. But Susie's parents used to read her The Pied Piper of Hamelin as a bedtime story.
Right.
Poetry as bedtime stories because she's actually Scottish. She was 12 when they came to Australia. So she's got all the British poetry behind her.
Yeah, I grew up with all the British romantic poets, Tennyson and Byron and Blake and all of those, Browning and everything. I just have to say to your listeners, though, I wonder if they know we're in the edge of the outback, 70 k's short of the Queensland border because of all the apostle birds in the background, Phil. Aren't they wild?
They are indeed. We're actually sitting at a hidden gem where we're doing this, listeners. Now, tell us all about A Hidden Gem, girls.
A Hidden Gem's our property in Lightning Ridge. There's an artist here called John Murray who has been in Lightning Ridge since the 80s and he's an absolutely wonderful man and a fantastic artist.
People will have noticed as they travel outside the metropolitan area that there's a really wonderful new fad of painting water towers
and
silos.
Absolutely.
So there's a whole silo trail that you can... Some of these pictures are just... They're mind-blowingly wonderful, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
And same with water towers. So our local wonderful John Murray's been painting water towers. He's off to Bourke at the moment. But he's just done the one in Walgett. And you may know... Most of you, all your listeners, of course, will have heard of Jimmy Little. What a wonderful singer.
Yes.
Yeah, so Jimmy was a Yorta Yorta man, but he did have a connection to Walgett. I think his wife came from Walgett. And his daughter, Franny Peters Little, lives here in Lightning Ridge. And John's just done... they've just commissioned that beautiful water tower in Walgett with the Jimmy Little portrait. And John does a lot of water towers around here. He's a great artist.
He is. Artist. And when we came to Lightning Ridge, I fell in love with the town. I wanted to buy property here straight away. You can buy a mining claim with a little caravan and a shed on it for $5,000 if you're lucky. And I had a couple of grand in my pocket and I thought, let's buy a place. I want to live here. I love Opal. And I really did just fall in love with the country and the people here. And we came to buy a different property, but I think someone was looking after us and it was meant to be the property that we originally came to buy didn't work out. It fell through and we went to the real estate agent. We said to Kim, show us what you've got in Lightning Ridge. And she said, this property's just come on the market and it's just
And this is
stunning.
The one we're at?
This is the one we're at. We've called it a hidden gem.
It's a beautiful place.
See, the idea in Lightning Ridge is from the outside, you don't want your property to look really good. You don't want people to think you're on Opal or you've got anything down your mine. So everywhere looks like a tip. Everywhere looks like a bit of a dump. There's old daggy old cars and there's old rusty iron.
Yep.
But when you get behind that rusty iron, people are so creative here. They're so wonderful. They start working with iron or wood or bottles. We've got bottle walls and bottle houses up here out of sheer necessity because they didn't have any other building materials. And so they started, I'm going to have to get another six-pack, love. I'm putting on an extension.
Oh, goodness me.
So this property was built by John Murray. He built everything here. He started with basically a shed. He built what we call the old camp. He's built part of it dug out, so it's partly below ground and partly above ground. It's beautiful cypress pine logs as the foundations of the walls.
We must be the recycling capital of the world. Yeah. So everything that our property is made of has been reused, reloved, pre-loved, yeah, recycled.
Mosaic paths that Vicky Murray made from old tiles that she's reused, and windows that have been reused from skyscrapers in Melbourne.
They might have a few cracks, but that just adds character.
It does indeed. It does indeed. And your bottle wall.
Our bottle wall, our building. Bottle fence, yes.
That
we're
is absolutely brilliant. I think I'm going to build one of those when I get home, actually.
So, listeners, what we've done, we just drilled a little hole up the bum of the bottle, and then we've put a piece of Rio through the bottle and threaded them all up the Rio. So in the afternoon, the sun just shines through the bottles and we get this wonderful, wonderful pattern on the concrete, and you've recycled all your bottles into a unique, amazing fence.
Absolutely brilliant. Now, what about the a hidden gem? Let's go back to that just momentarily, because you do performances here. You work at the Opal Caravan Park. And you're pretty much there every day of the week, aren't you? Every night of the week there.
Monday to Friday at the Opal Caravan Park for this particular season.
And yep, we do a happy hour show there for all the...
4:30 to 5:30. It's always family friendly and it's always lots of fun. If there's kids in the audience, we'll get them to hop up and do a poem with us, because we despair, Phil. We absolutely lament the fact that a lot of Australian school children do their primary schooling these days and they never get to hear about Banjo Paterson, Henry Lawson. We ask the school kids who wrote Waltzing Matilda, and they say, what's Waltzing Matilda? We're all a wonderfully, proudly, happily multicultural society, and we know that and we love that. And I'm a migrant, for heaven's sake. I love this country with all my heart. But there's got to be room for that Aussie culture too. Yeah. There's got to be room for a little bit of Waltzing Matilda and I Love a Sunburnt Country. And the kids are just... completely ignorant of it. Yeah, they've got no idea. And our idea is to make it fun for the children, yeah, make it really fun.
And when we go to the schools and we perform in front of the children, or we've got children in our audience and we perform in front of them, it's so immediate. Children, everything is screen-based these days. Yes. They've all got their mobile phones, they've all got their little iPads and their little tablets, and they play games and they do everything on a screen. But to see a performance that's happening right in front of you that includes the children and involves the children.
Yep. Where anything might happen at any moment. Yeah. It's exactly. Completely spontaneous, mm, and anything might happen.
And if we can just switch one kid on to going and having a look at a Banjo Paterson poem, or one kid to maybe go and pick up a pen and have a go at writing a poem, it's so rewarding for us. During the school holidays, we sometimes have families in the park and their kids will come every day, 3 or 4 days, and they get up and perform with us every day. And we've had children come and say, I wrote this poem last night.
Oh, wow.
Can I read it? And we say, of course. And they get up on the stage and they read this little poem that they've written. And it's
we have
just,
tears in our eyes. We're so happy.
Yeah.
Must be, yeah.
Every now and then we get an incredible reward, an incredible surprise. A few years ago we went to a primary school in Warren, which is, as you know, not that far from Dubbo.
Yep.
Warren, Navitai, Narromine, back down to Dubbo. And the whole of the 3-4 class were able to recite The Man from Snowy River.
Their teacher was really passionate about Australian bush poetry, and the entire class stood up and recited that poem to
us.
We
wept.
We were babbling idiots.
We were just, honestly, we cried. There was tears and snot and bodily fluids going everywhere. It was just, and we've been to another school where the whole of the 5-6 class knew the Mulga Bill's Bicycle. Mm. And we so appreciate it when, say, for example, a little town like Orange, a Rotary has picked up the fact that Banjo Paterson was born down there. Now they've got a festival. Now the schools have all had workshops. Now they're picking it up more and more. And it's just a matter of embracing our own culture, mm-hmm, which I think is so important for the kids to be grounded in that notion of a fair go and she'll be right, mate, and
mateship.
Working hard, mm, and mateship.
Well, listeners, I've actually spent a couple of hours here now with Mel and Susie at A Hidden Gem where they do a performance. They supply morning tea. They've got so much memorabilia in here. Banjo Paterson, Henry Lawson, and all the trophies that you've won, Mel. Your family must be so proud.
My dad's very proud of me. When I first started to compete and I won my Australian championship, the first one, in Charters Towers, my dad was like a little bantam rooster plucking all the feathers out of his chest. That's my daughter up there. That's my girl.
Yes.
And we've been working together so long now that mum and dad say, Have you seen the girls? Yeah. It's a lovely thing to carry on that family tradition, because...
Yep.
Dad writes and recites, and his father was a performer and a storyteller as well. So 100 years of storytelling in the family. It's a wonderful tradition.
Yeah, and not only that though. I mean, you're doing bush poetry, and you do charity work as well, and you're going into the schools. But you also got this great cruise that you've been on too.
Tell us
just a little bit about that cruise.
We were so very lucky. Our wonderful friend Grant Lurs, who's a country music singer and an ABC radio presenter down at Wagga Wagga, Grant said to us, "Hey girl, I'm getting together a breakfast comedy show for the country music cruise." And we looked at him with our eyes big and like, "Oh, can we come?" That's why I'm mentioning it, girls. So we hop on to the country music cruise. Well, there's one due in November this year, but we're all a little worried in case it mightn't go ahead with all the COVID.
Yeah.
But if it does, it'll be a country music and rock cruise combined. Right. So we've got Susie Quattro. Who knew that she was still alive, eh? That's wonderful. Susie Quattro, and didn't we all rock down to her?
Absolutely.
Oh man, we all loved Susie.
So
she'd be on the cruise if it goes ahead. And then of course they've got all the great country music artists from Australia, John Williamson and Troy Cassidaly, and all the wonderful artists that we'd know.
And right love. Down the bottom of the bill, the bush poets.
The very last line. Oh, Mel and Susie.
Mel and Susie as well.
It's great
well.
Fun to all do right. the cruise. We really enjoy that. It's really
an exciting holiday really for us.
Yeah.
Well, I can imagine this. Look, you girls, you're only young. You're not. Yes, no, I'm seriously.
So, Phil hasn't been to the optometrist for ages, listeners, and he really needs to go and get his glasses checked. I'm 60 this year.
Should have went to Specsavers.
Seriously, he needs to get back to Specsavers because he's peering at me over the way going, "You're just young," and I'm thinking, oh.
Well, what I mean by that is, I know you were 60, but I wasn't going to mention that, but you've still got a lot of years ahead of you where your poetry is concerned for your hidden gem. You've obviously got big plans for that, and you're obviously going to make Lightning Ridge your home for the rest of your life.
I think so. We've been here for 6 years, I think, now, and it's
just
a
love
wonderful
it. Do
town.
You know it's the friendliest place I've ever lived in my life, and I can't get over. If you want to be part of this community, they will embrace you. The thing about being older, though, Phil, is it works if you're female and you're a comedian, because we're getting fatter and fatter with every year. We just
and
can't shift it.
Wrinklier.
We're getting wrinklier. And do you know you can get naughtier and naughtier with your
the
comedy?
Older you get, it's
the older
great.
You get, the better, the funnier that you can be, because you can get away with outrage. They think, oh, it's just an old woman saying that. And it's fantastic. You can get away with blue murder.
Shirley Friend, one of the naked poets, is an absolutely wonderful performer, and she's got to be in her 80s now, and she just looks like everybody's grandma. She's a little short, grey-haired lady, and she says the most outrageous
things.
And she gets away with it. And we keep thinking, give us another 10 years.
So you could possibly be doing nude poetry in the next 10 to 20 years?
Never know,
definitely.
And one other good thing you said about the community here in Lightning Ridge is if you die, they'll bury you in your mine shaft. It costs you nothing.
We've got a community-based, a voluntary funeral service.
Yep.
Is that not incredible?
That's fantastic.
It doesn't mean you have to volunteer to die. It's not like a suicide
assistant. I volunteered last year.
Yeah, I had to dig you up. You weren't ready. No one called your number. But it's a beautiful idea that if you're living alone on a camp and living, because we get a lot of vets come up here to escape.
Yep.
We had a lot of people who just have had a gutful of the city. They don't want that life. They want to do their own thing out here, and no one's going to ask them questions or bother them.
Yep.
And if something bad happens to them, it's so beautiful to know the Miners Association will tell all their pals and let them, all their friends know. The local mayor will do. I find that hard to say in Australian. Mayor, the local mayor, will come out and do a eulogy at our local cemetery, and the community will throw on a little bit of a wake. It's a beautiful idea. Mm. It works a lot better now that we've got a old fridge from the club.
You struggle to say mayor, but you can say eulogy. Oh, listeners, as you can see, Mel and Susie, two fantastic ladies, absolute wonderful comedians, fantastic poets. And if you're in Lightning Ridge, you make sure you go to the Opal Caravan Park, see them perform there live. And if you miss them live at the Opal, come out to A Hidden Gem.
Thank you so much, Phil. That's a beautiful thing. Well, lovely to have you out here, and Lynn out here, and your little strange small dog.
Yes, which he thinks he's just a little Scottish terrier. Before we wind this up, girls, I've got to play a song. It's got to be Australian. Who's your favourite artist?
Well, Willow, I love John Williamson so much, but I especially love that he's written a really beautiful song all about Lightning Ridge.
Do you know any of it?
I know all of it.
Do you want to give us just a few bars to wind this up?
He's a dreamer, he's a drinker, a bull ant in a hole. He's a schemer, he's a thinker, he's a lonely soul. He's gouging for the opal, like a wombat or a mole, way out here in Lightning Ridge.
Oh, there you go, listeners. What an incredible performance. Mel and Susie from Lightning Ridge. Stick around for that Williamson classic, and we'll be back with more Roaming Oz straight after that.
Don't ask any questions, don't snoop around his claim. He'll be out with a dog and a shotgun. Who knows what he's hiding, or why he makes his stand? Men like him are buried alive with opals in their hands. Well, they say he came from Lismore, but that's about all we know. He came for a weekend only 20 years ago. Well, he must have had money in the bank, for he's found a lot more than potch. For every month he sends a cab for another case of scotch. He's a dreamer, he's a drinker, a bull ant in a hole. He's a schemer, he's a thinker, he's a lonely soul. He's gouging for the opal like a wombat or a mole, way out there at Lightning Ridge. Down below the leopard wood, below the bimble box, get your thrill on Lunatic Hill. Flashes of dancing colour, green and gold and red. Mix it with black and you're on your back, digging until you're dead. Well, it's not about a fancy car, it's not about the cash. They passed the hat for a swimming pool and built it in a flash. No, it's all about the opal, you get it in your eye. You see a glimpse of heaven with angels in the sky. And you're a dreamer, you're a drinker, a bull ant in a hole. You're a schemer, you're a thinker, you're a lonely soul. You're gouging for the opal like a wombat or a mole, way out there at Lightning Ridge. Sing with me. He's a dreamer, he's a drinker, a bull ant in a hole. He's a schemer, he's a thinker, he's a lonely soul. He's gouging for the opal like a wombat or a mole, way out there at Lightning Ridge. Way out there at Lightning Ridge.
Oh, there you go, listeners. That was a fabulous song made famous by John Williamson, Lightning Ridge, requested by the two bush poets and comedians, Mel and Susie. Listeners, we're out of time, but before we finish, I'm going to finish with another Johnny Williamson song, okay? This is a favourite of mine, and it's a number called You and My Guitar.
This guitar only sings the way I play it. It's part of me just like another arm. It started out as a little ukulele when I was just a boy on the farm. My fingers were too lazy for piano, but I could hold a tune pretty good. And I couldn't sing a song with a trombone,
so I taught myself to play this piece of wood. But I know you are staying beside me, true lovers, we both feel the pain. And I'd throw this old box on the fire before I'd ever lose you again. Well, you never did like this old guitar, did you, darling? Because the guitar takes your man away from you. One day I'll write a song for you, darling. That'll be the very best that I can do. Will it be a song about a wild wind with a thunderclap and flashes of blue? Or will it be a song about an angel? It'll never be as beautiful as you. I know you are staying beside me, true lovers, we both feel the pain. And I'd throw this old box on the fire before I'd ever lose you again. This guitar only sings the way I play it. It's a part of me just like another arm. It started out as a little ukulele when I was just a boy on the farm. But now I am a man with a woman. The words I want to say won't come through. No matter where this guitar's gonna take us, it'll never be as beautiful as you.
Hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or romanoz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.